You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
This is Columbia Calling, episode 306, the first episode of 2020. Welcome back to this new and improved Columbia Calling podcast. I'm here, your host, Richard McCall, in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And yes, we are looking to improve and grow our audience. We've had a bumper year in 2019, where the Columbia Calling podcast won an award, the Latin Podcast Awards, Best English Language Podcast in the Americas, and we want to build on that. I have launched a Patreon campaign to enable us to grow a little bit more with the help of your hard-earned cash. You can sponsor us for as little as $2 a month. Please think about it. There are various levels, tiers, to which you can sign up. And, well, yes, I really need to, get some sort of compensation for the time being spent on this podcast. And then hopefully I can start donating money to worthy causes around the country or picked by you, of course. So we have a Patreon campaign. Check that out at Columbia Calling. Other huge news, huge news, is that I became a father for the second time on the 2nd of January this year. I have another little boy. His name is Francis. So Francis McCall has come into our family. And so far, he and his mum are doing just fine. So I know that you'll all be pleased to hear that. And of course, my life has changed immeasurably for the better. It's a really welcome. He's a really welcome, welcome new member to our family. And of course, we'll be continuing in our vein of talking about family life, politics, travel, anything, environment. We had great interviews last year talking about Colombia and talking about everything that's going on here in the country. And we'll continue to work hand in hand with Adrian Alsema of Colombia Reports, giving you and bringing you the updates each week from Medellin, talking about Colombia and what's going on. So without further ado, I'll leave you in the hands of Colombia Reports, and then we'll be back talking with Gabriel Torres in Barichara, Santander, who is working on some incredible projects to try and bring tourism to the fore in more forgotten regions around Santander and connect various parts of the country through ancient indigenous pathways, which have been overlooked, well, for, I would say, centuries now. So stay tuned for a fascinating look at Santander, Boyacá, and Cundinamarca with Gabriel Torres on the line from Barichara. I will go away right now and be back in segment three. Thank you again for listening. Bye-bye.
My name is Adrian Alsema, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for January 7, 2020. The governors and mayors who dealt President Ivan Duque a major blow in elections last year took office last week. Especially the mayors of the capital Bogota and the cities of Cali and Medellin have been fierce critics of the president and have openly expressed their sympathy for protests against the government. Bogota Mayor Claudia Lopez has now become the most powerful woman in Colombia. Colombia's government released a draft decree with which it hopes it can resume the aerial fumigation of coca. The decree is the first initiative in an attempt to comply with court conditions that would allow the resumption of the controversial method to curb cocaine production. Whether the government is able to comply with the court's conditions is uncertain. What is certain is that the use of aerial fumigation would be severely reduced. Former President Álvaro Uribe helped facilitate a drug trafficking route for the Sinaloa cartel when he was in office in 2002, according to a former employee of the airliner that allegedly trafficked the drugs. According to the former security chief of Air Cargo Lines, Uribe received $1 million for his role in setting up the alleged route between Bogota's El Dorado airport and Mexico. The testimony of the former security chief was released by former prosecutor Richard Verriano, who fled to Canada in 2002 after revealing extensive ties between paramilitary group AUC and the authorities. Locals from Northwest Colombia have asked the United Nations to intervene, claiming they have lost confidence in the military. The residents of the locality in Bojayá are threatened by both ELN guerrillas and AGC paramilitaries who are vying for control over the region. The military claimed they had resumed control of the region after a paramilitary incursion, but this was contradicted by locals. The Secretary General of the United Nations urged the government to fully implement a 2016 peace deal with the FARC. UN Chief Antonio Guterres did so in the latest report on the progress of the peace process. President Ivan Duque has been reluctant to implement a peace deal that is fiercely opposed by his far-right Democratic Center Party. That's the end of Colombia Report's news bulletin. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia. And yes, this week, episode 306 of the Colombia Calling podcast, first episode of 2020. And we have on the line from Barichara, Santander, Gabriel Torres. He's a tour guide, but he's much more than a tour guide. He's going to be talking about some of his projects in Barichara and, you know, which will be of a greater good for tourism and an appreciation of history in the country. So I'm not going to natter on any more about this. Gabriel, welcome on Colombia Calling, and thank you for getting in touch with us.
Thank you very much, Richard. Thank you for having me online. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Now, you are originally from Tunja, the capital of Boyacá, that high, cold town up there, but you speak perfect English. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. Yes, I am from Tunja, Boyacá. Well, I actually, according to my family, I was born in Bogotá, but when I was 3 months old, my family moved to Tunja. So I was raised in Tunja until I was 11 or 12 years old. Then we moved to Atlanta, Georgia, where I did my high school and a couple of technical studies. Then in 2003, I moved back to Colombia. Mm-hmm. Did my college studies in international business administration studies, and now I'm doing touristic guidance. I can't believe I'm not doing this from many years ago. This is my passion. I love doing this. I love hiking. I love exploring the mountains, and it's really good. It's really amazing what I'm doing around here.
Well, I think you've got an enviable lifestyle. In the background, my listeners can hear the birds chirping. I imagine the sun is out and you have a view over the valley and the colonial rooftops of Barichara. Tell us a little bit about where you are now.
I do live in a cabin 3.8 kilometers away from town. And yes, everything that surrounds me is nothing but woods and a small valley. A lot of birds. Remember that Colombia has the most species in the world, over 1,500 species of birds. So yeah, there is a lot of birds around, and they're actually the ones that wake me up every morning. It's really nice. It's very nice. The weather is awesome. It's always over 26 degrees. It's very nice.
Yeah, definitely. No, I've been to Barichara a few times, and of course it routinely gets voted as one of Colombia, if not Colombia's most scenic and beautiful colonial town. Yes. So you know, it attracts foreigners and Bogotanos and so on. But I do recommend everyone take a trip there. Now, not mass tourism, but definitely go and visit this town. It is beautiful.
Yes, it is a very beautiful town. The history of the town goes back to 1700s. were actually this used to be an Indian region from the Guane Indians, and then the colonial time came, the Spaniards came and took over. We can put it that way. They took over, and the Indians disappeared. Mm-hmm. But it used to be an Indian ground, an Indian territory.
So sacred. I think lands.
Yes, definitely. Actually, a couple of days ago, we went on a hike to the Union. In Spanish, we call it Las Juntas. It's where the Suarez Canyon and the Chicamocha Canyon join together, where the two rivers turn into the Sogamoso River. And the guy, the elder that took us there, because it's not a Camino Real, but it's like a country people path. Mm-hmm. So we went there, and he shows like a whole hectare of an Indian cemetery. Wow. And like you said, it's actually like a holy ground for them. It was like a holy ground, holy territory for them. It was very nice. It is very nice.
It's amazing. So tell us about this and tell my listeners a little bit more. I mean, you spend your time exploring around there and mapping a bit, but you talked about this Camino Real, so this royal pathway. Tell us about these things, because this is really what we want to hear about.
Definitely. Well, Caminos Reales, they started with the Indians. The Indians on these regions were the Jarigis and the Guane Indians. They had made these paths. They used to be nothing but regular paths where they used to communicate with each other, maybe exchange goods. Remember that the Indians were not really into exchanging many goods because they were self-dependent. But they did use some of these paths to communicate with each other, to go visit each other in different villages, to go do rituals and stuff like that. So after the Spaniards came, they saw how these paths, they were very good actually to communicate towns, mm-hmm. because the Indians didn't go around the mountains. They will go straight through the mountain. Mm-hmm. If they have to hike 1 kilometer up a hill, they will do it. You see, nowadays we go around the mountains making the highways and everything. So that's why these paths were so good for the Spaniards. Mm-hmm. The Spaniards saw the necessity of fixing these roads so they can start bringing goods from the coast to the center, to the middle of Colombia. Wow. So before, they were paths of maybe 1 meter, 2 meters wide. And when the Spaniards came, they just put rocks on them and they fixed them. Mm-hmm. You see, before, the mules, the goods were taking too long to arrive to town. Let's say from the port, from the coast to Bogota. Let me give you an example. It could probably take him up to 5 months to get something there. Mm-hmm. So they decided to put some rocks on these paths, so the mules and the people can actually walk faster and won't get stuck in the mud. I've been reading a lot about it. And these paths actually go through the high parts of the Andean Mountains. They go through cliffs. I've been reading some stuff that it's really, really amazing how they actually took these rocks up to over 3,000 meters high just to fix these caminos. It's really amazing. That's why I'm really working on trying to make a whole map from the port of Magdalena, mm-hmm. to the center of Bogota. There are many paths. There are actually probably like 15 different paths, but not all of them are still preserved. There's only about, I would say that out of 18,000 kilometers, there's probably only about 5,000 kilometers of these Camino Reales that you can actually walk. The other ones are gone because of the highways or people's farms they have taken over.
I am getting my head around this idea of 18,000 kilometers.
It's a lot.
Yeah. And you're saying connecting the Caribbean coast all the way with the interior.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to do. So I've already worked the part with that starts from San Vicente del Chucurí, that goes through Zapatoca. This part of the Caminos Reales are called the Lengerke Caminos. Lengerke is the last name of a civil engineer, a German civil engineer who was hired during those times, during the 1800s, to fix this on this terrain. He worked from San Vicente del Chucurí through the Chicamocha Canyon, Los Santos, Barichara, Charala, he worked the majority of Santander, of the Department of Santander. Mm-hmm. And I'm already started, already mapped, I would say about 150, 200 something kilometers of it. It's a lot of work. It's really a lot of work. And since the weather conditions are pretty hot, it's very hot around here. Mm-hmm. It really takes a lot. Sometimes it takes some good logistics to be able to cross the canyon with a lot of weight and stuff.
But tell me, I mean, you're doing this all alone. You're mapping this. This is your project.
I'm mapping some of it alone, and some of the most difficult parts, like the parts of the Andean Mountains, I'm doing it with another friend who's also a professional guide. He's very interested also on making some routes, some routes here in Santander. Mm-hmm. But I'm going a little farther. Actually, I'm going a lot farther. I'm going all the way down to Bogota. I'm trying to cross Santander, Boyacá, and Cundinamarca, which actually these three departments are the departments that have the most Camino Reales marked. Mm-hmm. Boyacá has over 1,200 kilometers of Camino Reales that are marked that you can actually walk or do on mountain bike. So this is actually the reason why I decided to do it this way, because if you look at a map on Google Maps on Google Earth, you can see that there is actually a better line. Instead of going over the of the Andean Mountains, I can actually go through a straight line down to Bogota. But those Camino Reales have disappeared. If I cross the mountains, I will be able to go to Bogota using nothing but Camino Reales. That's the fun of it. I really want to go through these villages. I want to learn their history. I want to know more about them, because it's not just Colombian people that are living there. I mean, there's a lot of history. I just read about this guy called Jose Antonio Galan. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a hero for the Santanderians. It's a lot of history, man. I'm really thrilled. I'm really happy to work on this project.
So tell me about this. I mean, you're mapping these pathways, and I've got a lot of questions, but, you know, we talk about Colombians mapping them. Are there any, let's say, remaining indigenous groups who still know the history of these pathways, or has everyone been, you know, I say the families have mixed with Creoles and indigenous and so on. Has it diluted completely?
Unfortunately, yes. Actually, the last descendant from the Guana Indians just died 13 months ago. Her name was Felicia. I can't remember right now her last name. She became a national life heritage. Mm-hmm. The government gave her the title of national heritage because she was, besides being the last blood descendant, she was actually the only woman that preserved the technique of making the Indian pots. You know, how they the pots or the vessels. So she preserved that technique. She died 13 months ago, but her daughters still preserve the technique. Yes, unfortunately, there isn't much from the Indians, like people from the Indians that are left. But the good thing is that the locals do preserve a lot of their culture, of their of the things they do. And they know a lot of their history. Yeah. They know the past. Actually, in order for me to be able to complete mapping this, I have to use them. I have to use the locals. Mm. I have to go every time I go, like, let's say I'm trying to cross a 2,500 meter high mountain. I most probably have to use a local to take me to the other side. They're the ones that are going to help me do this, because I don't think I'll be able to do it by myself. The locals are the ones that really have the experience and the knowledge.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. And are you getting like foreigners and Colombians who want to hike these trails with you? Are you promoting them touristically?
Definitely. You see, this is the reason I'm working on this project is because part of my thesis, part of my studies are directed to this, to promote this Camino Real. I have it on my mission to turn it into, let's put it even, if not better, something like the Santiago of Compostela, mm-hmm. that every hiker in the world knows it. I want to do something like that with Colombia, because we have lost a little bit of the respect from other nations, because we used to have this bad reputation of being violent and you know, dealing with drugs and stuff. So we lost a lot of that love from the rest of the world. So But I just want to show people that we're more than people. We're mountains. We're water. We have a lot of green, a lot of birds. And if I can do this, these Caminos Reales are going to show that to the world. Exactly that.
I love the idea of Santiago de Compostela in Colombia. I love it. I love this idea of a multi-stage hike that you can do, hiking to small towns. Can you imagine what that will do for the trickle-down economy of tourism in these small towns who don't receive, let's say, foreigners or Bogotanos? And
that is exactly what I'm like, one of the things that I'm focusing on. I want those small towns that have a lot of important history, and just because maybe there is no highways that are crossing them, they're like being left behind. Mm. So I know with these Caminos Reales, people are going to be able to know about them and to really find out who they really are, because actually the smaller towns of Colombia are the ones that were more important during the freedom of Colombia. Mm. The big towns, the big cities were just the cities where the Spaniards just settled there. But the little towns around those big cities are the ones that really have the history. So that's what I want to bring him back alive. Let's put it that way, with this Camino Reales.
Wonderful. Now I have some sort of points to make on this one. You do this and you recover a sense of history and a sense of nature, and you're going to have to do it alongside, obviously, the history of these areas, like the Comuneros uprising, but also previous to that, of course, the indigenous settlements. You're going to have to incorporate all different facets of history. And like you were alluding to in that last little segment, the problem is that everyone outside of Colombia, and a lot of Colombians as well, you know, the whole idea of the armed conflict in Colombia has erased in many people's minds the idea that anything existed before, let's say, the FARC and ELN and something else. That's
right.
It's this problem that we get, that nothing has existed in Colombia before that, but there's so much more here.
Exactly.
And then I have to ask, because my listeners will ask, these pathways, and we're talking like San Vicente de Chucuri, which I now know has been completely demined of landmines. So there used to be landmines. It's a problem area for the ELN. Zapatoca has so much history. In fact, there used to be a Jewish synagogue there. But the security on these pathways is fine. You're not going to wander through guerrilla lands, paramilitary lands, and so on.
That is the second reason, probably the most important reason why I decided to use these three departments, Santander, Boyacá, and Cundinamarca, because unfortunately, if I do it the easy way, which will be going in a straight line from the port of Magdalena straight to Bogotá, those are very, we call it red zone.
Yeah.
The red zone is the danger zone. That's still a red zone. And fortunately, this part of Santander, it's from San Vicente to Bogotá, it's very, very peaceful. You walk by and the village people will tell you, the only people that you will see is us. They will tell you so proudly. No, they will say, no, Manu, the only people that you will see is us. Manu is like brother.
Yeah, in Santander, so, no?
Yes, in Santander.
See, my wife's in Santander.
Yeah, so that's the other reason, because a lot of people told me, Gabriel, you can do it in a straight line without having to cross the western wall of the Andes Mountains. You can, but that's terrible. I mean, I can do it, but I won't be able to bring tourists around there. And so this is the best way. And the other thing is that as we go through these three departments, we'll be experiencing, I'll be having the people experiencing three different kinds of temperatures. Mm. 20 days ago, I went, the last time I hiked the San Vicente, another cool experience is that you go through three different kinds of forests, up to the frailejones. You know, you heard about the frailejones, I imagine.
Yeah, of course, the high altitude savannas, which are beautiful.
The flowers that absorb all the humidity. Yes. So, so that's a really cool thing. That's a different thing about the Santiago of Compostela, because the majority of the path you will stay under certain altitude. Here, you will go from 470, which is down at the Chicamocha Canyon, to 3,400 meters.
Wow.
Altitude in Boyacá.
Wow.
So that's another like amazing thing about this Camino Real, is that you get to see different kinds of forests, flowers, animals. It's really cool, man. It's amazing.
And now, are there pathways that, for example, extend from Boyacá down to Casanare into the Llanos, sort of like the route that the German conquistador Nicolas de Federmann would have taken?
Yes, actually, there is one, and it's still used every time they do like protests in Bogota, national protests. There are groups of, they call it the comuneros, and they do the walk. They do the walk from the Llanos Orientales to Bogota using all the Caminos Reales. Wow. They go up to the Páramo of Chingaza, I think, which is one of the highest ones in Colombia. Over 3,400 meters high, and yeah, that one is a really cool Camino, but that one is actually being used already mostly by the nationals, and they usually do it also in the national festivity during the October and November festivities of Santa Fe de Bogota and a bunch of the big cities' birthdays.
Wow. This is really cool.
They use it a lot. That one is an awesome Camino Real. That was like a straight line.
So this is living history. This is still being used.
It's a net. If I could actually do the whole net of Caminos Reales, the whole 18,000, I'm pretty sure I will go through all the indigenous cultures and the subcultures, but that will take... That'll take probably 5 years. It's too much. It's a lot of mountains.
But you're going to be more famous than Egan Bernal.
Yeah, I've climbed higher mountains than him. That would be a dream. That would be awesome.
But tell me something. You mentioned this German engineer.
Giovanni Gerken.
Lengerket. Now, as I said earlier, my wife's from Santander, but from Barranca Bermeja, so down in the lowlands. But she has family up in Bucaramanga and other places. But she says von Lengerke is responsible for the white Santanderians with blue eyes, because he introduced all of his friends and said, procreate, have babies here. Is this true, this legend around von Lengerke?
Yes and no. I will say yes and no. Yes, he was a man with many women. And I would say no, he wasn't the one that would be like telling his friends what to do. But imagine this. This is a German, very big guy with money that comes around, and everywhere he goes, he's a completely icon for everybody, because he's bringing... During those times, he was bringing the future to the people, making roads. And everywhere he go, let's say he was building from Zapatoca to Guane, he will use all the locals to build the road. So he was an icon for them. So I can imagine how the women feel about him. Mm. And there is a lot of his. It is true that he had many, many different women, and he left many, many descendants. I did heard that he died from drinking. He had such a good life and such a fun life, I guess, such a free life, that he was a big time wine drinker.
I think it sounds like a life to excess, wine and women.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. And imagine that going everywhere you go, you were new to them. So the other town, they know about the new town doesn't know about you. So all the women, and I mean, for him, all the women were like, they look at him like as a hero.
Yeah.
Like I said. Yeah.
It's so interesting. This history.
And it's really cool, because from what I heard, Giovanni Gerke was actually here in Colombia, because he was hiding from the police, from the German police. He had committed a homicide about some land problems. So he was here in Colombia actually hiding. How did the Colombian government knew about it? That's something probably don't know about it, but that's something that is in the records, that he was actually hiding here.
That's crazy. I like it. I like people hiding here. But at the end of this all, the idea is to open up something like a Santiago de Compostela.
Yes.
The idea is to improve lives and to show the real Colombia. Have you received any help, let's say, from the tourist industry in trying to do this, or you are totally on your own?
I'm totally on my own. Part of the studies I'm doing right now, from what I understand, is that I can have some kind of help. I don't know if it's economic. Hopefully it is, to finish my studies, to finish my thesis, to finish my project. So I'm studying with the SENA. I don't know if you heard about SENA. SENA, it's a government institution. They're actually one of the only ones that are giving these courses for national guides. So they're preparing us really good, very good. And at the end, on the thesis part of the on the practice part, if we have a good project, they can actually help us with some money. But I'm gonna try to see what I can do, because yeah, it's a big project. It's gonna take a lot of time and a lot of money. But either way, I'm going to do it. I heard something, somebody told me not too long ago, that just keep your goal in your mind, and no matter how long, how much it takes, you will get it done. I'm just keeping it in my mind, and eventually I'll finish it. I mean, I've already advanced a lot. I started this project about 3 months ago, and I already covered the Chicamocha Canyon. San Vicente, I already did the western wall of the Andes Mountains. It's pretty good. You know, I mean, I have to work too. I also have to work, and whatever I have free time, I hit the mountains. So it's something that I do between work and my free time.
Excellent. Well, you have to make a living. So a friend of mine was doing some consulting for, I guess one of the big companies who are going to work on the Magdalena River. And they were wanting, you know, consulting from someone who knows about tourism and knows about Colombia, and he was doing this. And one of the things he suggested in the huge write-up, he spent months on this, it was a long contract, was a hiking/cycle route that followed the whole of the Magdalena River, because it was about reincorporating it back into Colombian life. And, you know, these would connect these towns that we don't visit and so on. Just like I know in Germany, they've done a huge cycle route across the country and so on. And I thought, wow.
I think it's Australia.
Oh, maybe Australia too. And I just thought, wow, what a wonderful opportunity. And they read it and they just threw it away. I mean, I think the idea from us is incredible, but then I think these companies do these proposals as a kind of greenwash. You know, they just do it to say they've done it, and then they don't follow it. So I think your idea to do this alone is going to be more productive.
Yes, definitely. One thing I've noticed is that the most important thing that these big companies lack is people who can actually do the work. They can actually have the money and the equipment, but if you don't have somebody, that can actually, let's put it this, put the boots on and put a book bag on their back and start walking, none of that money, none of that equipment is going to do nothing. It's a lot of time it's about that, because they're doing this kind of projects. It takes a lot of effort, from a physical effort. It's a lot of walking. And remember, Colombia has many different weathers. Most of it is hot. So I think some of the reasons these companies don't get to finish their projects is because they don't have the people who do the whole job. Sometimes it's a lot of people that you sit on a desk, and it's not about sitting behind a desk. It's about really putting the boots on and hitting the field, and hitting the mountains.
Well, this is amazing, and I wish you all the best for this. How can people get in touch? The best way, I think, is through your Instagram account, which is Turismo Natural Santander.
Yes, I am Gabriel Torres. Mm-hmm. I do have you guys actually can also look in Google Maps and Barichara Santander. Turismo Natural Santander.
Okay, perfect. So that's where people can find your, you know, your contact details if they they're coming to Barichara and the surrounding areas and they want you as a guide. Because I hate to say it, you know, the level of English in Colombia is very low, and so being able to find someone who's a native English speaker is a huge advantage for you.
Yes, that's I'm very happy that I can use this as an advantage. I have actually been very lucky for speaking such good English that I've been getting a lot of calls from big companies to take groups because of my English. Okay. And that's been a blessing. That's really been a blessing.
Well, this is fantastic. Gabriel, yeah. I love this project that you're working on, and count on us to help spread the word and trying to find people who might be interested and get in touch with you. We'll be here supporting you 100%. Thank you for your time here on the Colombia Calling podcast. I wish you all the best for 2020.
Richard, it was my pleasure, man. And thank you. Thank you very much for showing the world this part of Colombia. It's a small paradise.
Yes.
Thank you, man. Thanks a lot, man. And I'm really, really happy to be able to finish this. And you'll be one of the first persons that I will get in touch to share this.
Let me know. Come back on and tell us how it all's gone. And thank you again. So
I will share my scars with you.
Yes. Definitely. Anecdotes are wonderful, not real scars.
That's what I call it, my anecdotes.
Okay, so listen, everyone, thank you to Gabriel Torres, who's out there in Barichara, Santander. Thank you to everyone listening. This has been episode 306 of the Colombia Calling podcast. This has been the first episode 2020. Please, we have a Patreon campaign. I really want to continue growing and improving the podcast. Just look up Colombia Calling on Patreon. You can sponsor us for as little as $2 a month, and it's to go towards recording equipment, and hopefully if I get to a certain level, I can start donating to worthy social projects around the country or in particular areas. But anyway, take a look. Anyway, that's me signing off for this week. We've got great interviewees lined up for the next few weeks. Thank you again for listening. And that's me saying goodbye. Richard McCauley in Bogota for Colombia Calling. Thank you again. Bye-bye.